So you have just this whole picture, and it's just like this little thread of Bhaduri Mahashaya saying, oh, I get lots of letters from the West, you know, just sort of dropping the hint, Yogananda says, that someday he's going to be part of that. And again, Swami Yogananda writes, I wonder how many of these saints knew that I would someday write their story up for this book. And again, we sort of sit here. We have this book, Autobiography of a Yogi, is just so well known. If you go to any conference of, we don't use the word New Age that much anymore, but forward-thinking people, and you say, how many of you have read Autobiography of a Yogi? I mean, you'll have a room, 500 people, 457 of them will all have read Autobiography of a Yogi. And people just read this all the time. But it only was written some 50 years ago. And it's interesting to read it with the consciousness that it was written. Even in Yogananda's life, he came in 1920, and he didn't publish this till 1946. So most of his Swami came in 1948. I got the dates mixed up. So most of his disciples didn't know these stories about his early life or anything, the whole story of it. So it's fascinating to think of it that way. All right, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and go to the last, most wonderful chapter. Let's take 10. Your questions before we go on to Master Mahashaya? Master Mahashaya is such a thrilling character in this story. Any of you who've read anything about Sri Ramakrishna, the whole gospel of Sri Ramakrishna was written by M, and it's the same man. I remember how excited I was. I was studying Sri Ramakrishna's teaching before I read Autobiography of a Yogi, and I can just still remember it. Somehow the fact that he was in both books was just so thrilling to me. And, I mean, Master Mahashaya is one of the most significant characters in the whole drama of Ramakrishna's life, because as M, he would go to Ramakrishna's place where he lived outside of Calcutta, where Yogananda tells the story of how they went out to Dakshineswar to the Kali temple. And Sri Ramakrishna was one of the great masters of our times, also said by his disciples to be an avatar, and most probably was. I mean, what I mean to say is I have no reason to say otherwise. Yogananda revered him highly. And he also lived about the same period of time. He died in the late, like, 1880s, I think, somewhere in there. And he spent most of his life as the pujari, as the priest, at this temple located outside of Calcutta in a suburb called Dakshineswar. And he was the pujari, that means the priest who was in charge. It was his job. He was a Brahmin priest, and he was hired to be in charge of the worship and the care of Kali, Divine Mother as Kali. And there's this beautiful, he talks about this nine towers in this beautiful big temple where the image of Kali was, where Ramakrishna took care of the image. And Ramakrishna lived in a little room on the temple grounds. And his wife, Sarada Devi, Ramakrishna had a wife named the Holy Mother, and she lived in a little building right next to where Ramakrishna lived. And Ramakrishna was there for many years, and his disciples all would come and sit in the room, and Ramakrishna would instruct them. And the holy, it's very, very holy ground. It's one of the most holy places in the world where Ramakrishna lived, that temple ground. And, of course, it's part of our India pilgrimage, so I have an image in my mind exactly as I describe all of this. And Master Mahashaya, M., would go, because he lived in Calcutta, and he would go as often as he could, which was very often, to Ramakrishna's room, and he would faithfully record everything that Ramakrishna said. And that is the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, which is this great big book like this, which is just, you know, word, who was there, what they said, what the master said, just in a very, just page after page after page. And so a great deal of the reality of Ramakrishna was created by the book that M wrote. That's why he just put M, because he was too humble to put any more than that on the name of it. So he was Master Mahashaya was a great spiritual figure, a towering spiritual figure. And the intersection between himself and Yogananda is it particularly dear. Yogananda had a great affection for Ramakrishna, and Ramakrishna might figure more prominently in our situation here. There was a strange karma associated with that, which is that the Ramakrishna order also sent Indian Swamis to America, to many cities, including Southern California. Swami Vivekananda coming, I think, in 1904. 1893 he came to America? He died in 1904. I get everything all mixed up. He came in 1893. But he was one of the first, not the first, but one of the first great Swamis to touch America. But he just traveled and then left. But the Indian Swamis from the Ramakrishna order who were in Southern California had a certain amount of discomfort with Yogananda because Yogananda overshadowed them. And it became a little awkward for Yogananda to incorporate Ramakrishna too much into his own mission. So it was held a little bit more at bay than it might have been otherwise. You know, shrines to him and so on. So it's sort of an interesting part of it. But nonetheless, the degree of devotion and the importance that Master Mahashaya played in Yogananda's life is an indication of the unity of the two paths. And Ramakrishna also offered the same message that Yogananda offered, which is saying that all this apparent separation between spiritual teachings is all just delusion. Ramakrishna manifested it in a very dramatic way because he actually personally practiced all these different teachings. He was a Christian. He was a female Radha devotee of Krishna. He was a Shivite. He practiced Tantra Yoga. He became Hanuman, the monkey, worshipping Rama. I mean, literally. When he was Radha, Ramakrishna became so feminine, he dressed in feminine clothes. He would be with the women in their private quarters, and nobody felt that he was a man. He was just a woman. And he experienced in each of these paths the supreme realization of God and demonstrated through his own practice of the sadhana that they were all true. And when he was Hanuman, the monkey devotee, he tied his dhoti like a tail. He lived on bananas, and he spent a lot of time in the trees. I mean, Ramakrishna was extreme. Until he was recognized as a saint, they thought he was a lunatic. But, you know, after time, they began to realize that he was mad with God and not merely mad. The power of Master Mahashaya that just comes through, and the degree to which Yogananda reveres him, you know, I never thought I would bow to anyone, and I fall at the feet of this man. And he also, you know, speaks to Master Mahashaya as if Master Mahashaya might be his guru. And it's not, he makes it seem like it wasn't clear, and that Master Mahashaya had to say, no, I'm not your teacher. But in fact, Master Mahashaya gave him divine experiences and interceded with him with the Divine Mother. I mean, he played the role of guru in the sense that it's through the guru's grace that our own inner consciousness opens. Even later, when Yogananda comes to Sri Yukteswar, all his efforts to meditate don't bring him divine realization until his master touches him. And even though we think of master as sort of being the source of everything, in Master's own life, he always gave the credit to Sri Yukteswar. And Swamiji even tells a peculiar story of Yogananda talking about, in some situation, I can't remember the details, maybe it was some dark force that was coming in, that Master himself was helpless until he prayed to Sri Yukteswar. And then when Master prayed to his own guru, then the power came into him. And Yogananda himself would always give the credit to the masters behind him. And it's just, even when the disciple becomes as great as the master, the disciple never ceases to be grateful to the one who opened the door, the portals to divine consciousness. And so he talks about Master Mahashaya as the humblest man he ever knew. And these are very strong words. Just the humblest, the incarnation of humility. And so humble was he that he never even considered his thoughts his own. That even whatever he would think or say, he would always end by saying, or so my master told me. You know, just always appreciating that everything about who he was, he didn't have an ego to own it. He was just, as I was saying earlier, about We all pray to be instruments and attuned, and then we see it manifested in this great soul. That whatever understanding he had, he always just laid it at the feet of his master, or so my master told me. And you know, Master Mahashaya's sadhana had been to just write down those thoughts year after year. And it's so dear when he describes him as, you know, he was a schoolmaster. He trained young boys and trained them entirely through the power of his divine realization and his divine love. And what a great gift it would be to be one of his students. And just the paradox, the interestingness that Master Mahashaya took over the very house that Yogananda's family had been in at one point, in 50 Amherst Street, which is a very large house. We've seen it's a very big house. And after Yogananda's family moved out, then Master Mahashaya moved in. So again, you have these sort of interweaving trails. And you also, again, realize the way in which we see all these things as separate, and that how they really come together, that the movement that Ramakrishna helped begin is the same movement that Yogananda has carried on, this breaking down of sectarian boundaries and this breaking down of the thought that there's only my way and there's no other way. Swamiji laughs and says, you know, the Ramakrishna order has fallen prey to a certain extent to the same thing that's happened to SRF, which is some of the spirit has been changed by too institutional an approach, and some of Ramakrishna's disciples, the ones who are deluded, not the real ones, say, well, you know, Ramakrishna said that all paths were the same, but he was the greatest because he was the one who said it first. You have Master Mahashaya's devotion to Divine Mother and how he allowed Divine Mother to run even the smallest things, and you have that exceedingly touching scene where they were together and the very unpleasant man came and was just making their time together, spoiling their time together because he was talking so much and he was so obnoxious. I was going to sneeze. I don't want to sneeze into an amplifier. I think the danger is past. Okay. I ended inadvertently a long meditation by sneezing into an open mic once. Nearly just blew karma out of everyone's spine. I've been silent for a really long time, and then I sneezed into my microphone. So I'm real sensitive about that. Even unamplified, my sneeze is impressive. Amplified it. It was a moment to remember. But the touching way in which Master Mahashaya, in his humility, you know, this is also a picture of what true humility is. He wasn't so humble that he didn't think God didn't care about him. You know, in fact, he was so humble that he was just like a child, and he knew that God would care about him. You understand what I mean? So often we think that humility really means that we don't value ourselves. That's not true. Humility is really seeing ourselves exactly as we are. And he saw himself as a little child in Divine Mother's world. And so there's something very unpleasant was happening to them, which is that this man was being so obnoxious, and there they were having such a blissful time, and this obnoxious man was there. Of course, Master exaggerates the story. But Master Mahashaya says, I've spoken to Divine Mother about it. He's going to think of something that he has to do. And they reach, you know, Master tells the dramatic story of how he desperately looked for his liberation, you know, at the corner in the red house, and then the obnoxious man goes away. But this is just Master Mahashaya moving through the world, holding Divine Mother's hand, with the calm assumption that whatever he wants, she wants. And the same story again repeats itself when they go in to see the bioscopes and they're trapped in the dull college lecture. Well, Divine Mother has taken mercy on us and the lights are going to go out about now. And then they walk out and then the lights mysteriously come on. You know, Divine Mother is just holding his hand just as he starts the whole chapter by Master Mahashaya says to Master, you know, just a moment, I'm conversing with my Divine Mother, don't interrupt me. And Master just goes into a despair because right in front of him, someone is having the experience of the Divine Mother and he's not able to tune into it. And so Master Mahashaya intercedes for him. And again, you have this pattern which is always there, that God works through instruments. Even for someone of the consciousness of Yogananda, the way he plays out his lila is that he finds these great souls and has this great devotion and receptivity to them. And so he's showing us how, as I was saying last week, how you get back through the wall to the spirit on the other side by finding great souls and having great devotion to them. Yogananda didn't need any of this, but this is the lila. This is the limitation he accepted, is that in his limited role as a human being, he had to play the game of what devotees have to do, which is you draw your grace by your reverence and respect and devotion to the one who has the power to give it to you. And so we have this just such a moving story of the way he interacted with Master Mahashaya in this way. Oh, and then you have that, just that little tiny scene of Yogananda hearing, I think it was near Howrah Station, and he hears these very, very undevotional people chanting, and you have to be in India to really appreciate how really awful it can be, just unspeakably awful. I know once we went to a satsang of an Indian teacher in the area, and David and I both said, afterwards someone asked, what was it like? I said, oh, it was so wonderfully Indian. The microphones were all too loud, and they were squeaking all the time, and the chanting was distorted, and it was just so much like being in India. I mean, it was just nothing works quite properly. But there are two things about it that I loved. One was, there you are at the railroad station, and there's just a group of people chanting, and it's just sort of the given, because maybe there were pilgrims going off somewhere. I mean, think about BART or California Avenue, you know. I mean, we do, when we're on pilgrimage, even when we leave, we sit down in the airport just sort of to get people trained and not paying attention to what's going on. But it's not common. But in India, it's perfectly common. As I say, maybe they were all getting on a train to go to a pilgrimage spot somewhere, who knows, and they were just doing what they were doing. But they were raucous. And in Yogananda's mind, this little bit of judgment starts coming. You know, that we divide the world up into what we accept and our likes and dislikes. And immediately Master Mahashaya comes to him. And in this way, also you see him behaving like the guru. He was supervising his consciousness. And you know, the first thing he says is, don't judge. Don't think about, I mean, he doesn't say those words, but he just says, isn't it sweet to hear them chanting God's name, no matter how they chant it? But that they should even do it, isn't that a thrill to all of us? And this is the humility. Here's this man has such a great level of realization himself, but the very greatness of his realization makes him appreciative like a child. And he looks at the world as Divine Mother looks at it. They're all my children. And even if they call me raucously and unpleasantly, I'm so glad they're calling me. You know, that's all that matters to the mother. So this chapter is one that one can just go back to over and over again just to sort of feel the sweet energy that's coming out of it. The Master's own guru, Sri Yukteswar, was much more stern, and just even as Mahashaya himself said, I believe, or was Bhaduri Mahashaya who said, your guru will forge the fires of your devotion in the fires of wisdom, or strengthen your devotion through the fire of wisdom. But for Mahashaya, Master Mahashaya, it was more like they were of the same spirit. And we have, again, this whole wonderful picture of the devotion to Divine Mother. And it even goes to the Kali temple, with what we often call it in Dakineshwar, where Ramakrishna too was this great devotee of the mother. His whole devotion was to Divine Mother. So Yogananda's also setting the stage, because he's not that explicit through this book, but Master Mahashaya and Ramakrishna are another sort of directional sign. You know, this is the way we should be looking. This is really where the power of this age is going to come from. So, that's probably my whole story. Is there a comment or a thought before a question before we let it go? All right, then. That will be tonight. That's it. Thank you for coming. Next week we read what? I Meet My Master, chapter 10 and 11.